Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Dialect is Bristol's first podcast, set up in 2002 and goes out every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. here on BCFM 93.2. This week, the Rosicrucian Christmas for you. How about that for some tips for your Christmas festivities? Plus our weekly news review with Jason Yannakopoulos and the weekly What's On Guide and Song of the Week from Jeff Sparks. Dialect is produced by volunteers. If you want to join in, contact Volunteering Bristol and we'll have a reminder of phone numbers for Volunteering Bristol at the end of the show. First though, Jason Yannakopoulos is with me. What's in the news this week? I see you're clutching a copy of the festive Private Eye. Jason, what's in the news?
Well, we're starting off with limited liability partnerships.
Okay, these are these LLPs. That's what it stands for. But what are they?
They're really sort of shady corporate agreements that allow companies to be based in Britain but have their profits owned in places like Seychelles or the Marshall Islands or Grenada or somewhere where
there's...
Or Panama.
Oh, yes. This is where David Cameron's father put all of his money as soon as he could and pioneered tax avoidance. I nearly said evasion, but it's not. It's avoidance, apparently.
Perfectly legal, yes.
These LLPs, I mean, are we talking about companies like Amazon, Vodafone? Are these the sort of people that keep their money out there?
Not just them, but also sort of some, even more shady companies than that. I mean, this one particularly deals with some of the ones that own things like the conference centre and presidential helicopter pad next to Ukraine Parliament and stuff like that.
Okay, but what about in Britain? Are there any big British firms that are LLPs that are keeping squirreling away their profits elsewhere and not paying tax properly?
Well, of course, there's Vodafone and Amazon and companies like that. There's also a lot of these arms firms which are real proper LLPs, as in they base themselves elsewhere, but their companies are owned in places like Seychelles and Grenada.
You're talking about arms firms. Okay, let's name some names then. What was the Private Eye report saying?
This doesn't particularly... doesn't particularly mention, but it does mention Rothfield Capital, which is behind a lot of the...
Okay, who's that again?
The Rothfield Capital. These aren't an arms firm one, but these are the ones that own a lot of the stuff in the Ukraine, and they're actually owned by the president of the Ukraine's family.
Oh, right, because there's all this unrest going on in Ukraine, isn't there? Fascinating to see what's been going on. I mean, you must have been following that, Jason. They've had... it seems that they're torn, Ukraine, between being allied to the Russians to the east or to the EU to the west.
Yeah,
they're having a big paddy about it. So how is that related to this story?
Well, it's very interesting because it points out that some of the support for Russia and some of the things they've been able to negotiate there has come courtesy of some of these LLPs that have offices in Britain. So it's really surprising that these LLPs in Britain are sustaining the corporate networks that are crucial in this episode.
Okay, so also insolvency, apparently. That's going on too.
Yes, this is Business Secretary Vince Cable has demanded from his entrepreneur-in-residence, Lawrence Tomlinson, to basically tear into the RPT's small business trashing ways.
Hang on, this is RBS, isn't it? Now... let's not forget, of course, as Dominic Laurie on Five Live keeps saying, that RBS is not just RBS, it's also NatWest and Ulster Bank, as well as some others. Mm-hmm. Now, I just have to say one thing about, I mean, I don't have to say anything, do I? But I do, and I'm here, and so I might as well, which is that the big trial back in the early 1990s, which gave a green light for fraud right across the City of London, was, guess what? County NatWest Bank, part of the same group. As RBS. We've also had, as well, people sticking their cards in the machines and nothing happening, returning a little message saying, sorry, there's no money in your account, when they've got thousands in their accounts. I mean, we're almost completely reliant on these banks. They seem to have got us by the short and curlies. But what's Tomlinson been saying, Jason?
Well, He's been asked to give a report into RBS's way, which he's actually torn at. It doesn't actually quote him in here. It says, but it points out that with Tomlinson himself, had made similar deals when he was in business, when he was the owner of Tricare Limited, a home company.
So hang on, private eye having a go at Tomlinson, really?
Well, it points out that when he was in business, he conducted a very similar deal himself.
Where he closed down a company, did he?
Well, actually, he closed down his own company, sold it to another company, and then negotiated it so that they avoided the tax, man.
Oh, right. Well, the thing is, look, loads and loads and loads of people are up to these tax scams. It's just that the government doesn't get tough with them. But anyway, his report, is it Lawrence Tomlinson?
It is indeed.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fantastic Vince Cable's guy, because he's managed to show that the Royal Bank of Scotland, which is a nationalised bank, again, I mean, we were talking last week briefly, weren't we, about this idea of nationalised industries turning on the public rather than serving them, you know, what with the certain kind of shift towards the more totalitarian side from the left. But, I mean, this is a nationalised bank, RBS, and yet it's stitching up customers, it's closing down viable companies, stealing all their stuff, or actually not stealing, sorry, taking all of their stuff. And in a way, this is what we were talking about last week. I did say that the Labour Party were going along with this idea of sort of police privatisation, that kind of thing, amalgamating all the police areas into one. And it looks like they've backtracked from that now, because we were hot on the news on Tuesday. By Wednesday last week, the Labour Party have backtracked and they're saying, oh, we're not so sure about that now. So maybe there is a little bit of a conscience in there. But this is what bothers me, is we've got the state turning for something which is serving the people to basically a bunch of control freaks who are just sitting there ordering everybody and telling them what to do. And part of this, of course, comes from the secret state, you know, GCHQ and all the Snowden stuff. So anyway, insolvency stitch-ups by RBS. Also, what are your thoughts about this idea of you put your money into the cash point and it says, sorry, computer says no?
Well, that happened to my friend Alex Marshall. He's a close friend of mine from back home. He stuck a thing in the machine that said he didn't have any money. So I was forced to buy drinks from that night.
Ah, well, did you actually see, for sure, did you actually see on the screen that it really said that? Because that could be an excuse, couldn't it? He could have come along to you and said, Jason, I'm sorry, my machine doesn't work. Buy the drinks tonight.
Highly unlikely.
Okay, he's a trustworthy guy.
This is the Eton educated one.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, right. Well, that maybe they teach them that at Eton, how to scam the drinks.
Well, no, because he did come back on, that was last week, and he did come back yesterday, and he said, well, my bank says I haven't got any money, but I have been allowed to draw out £10, so there's the £10 that I owe you from the previous night.
Okay, cool. Well, anyway, I mean, the thing is, when they first went over to using cash points, my goodness, I was knee-high to a grasshopper, probably the 1970s, late 70s, early 80s. You know, you could kind of sense there was something a bit strange going on. And now we're in the situation where, what would we be able to do if all of the banks suddenly said no? You know, you went for days on end. And this happened in Argentina, didn't it, around about 2000. All of the bank machines just basically got switched off. I mean, the other thing, of course, is with this RBS business, their cash points going on the blink this week for however many hours it was, is it just that they've run out of cash? I mean, if you run out of cash, it's a bit embarrassing. So what you could do is just switch off your cash points.
Well, I mean, with RBS, I don't know how they can run out of cash when they've been gobbling up all these little companies.
Oh, well, maybe they've been doing all sorts of things that they shouldn't be doing with it. I mean, we certainly know that there is a little reliability from the auditors. I mean, the auditors of these big banks signed them all off as perfectly healthy in 2006, 2007, 2008, and then we know what happened. Is those accounts that the auditors had signed off were a load of gobbledygook.
Hello, auditor, here's our heavily doctored account. Fine, signed.
Exactly. I mean, if you're paying these guys to give you a clean bill of health and they come along and say, oh, we can't really give you a clean bill of health. This has been the crisis in auditing, the big three auditing firms, you know, being looked into by the Competition Commission. Anyway, a bit frustrating. So have you got an RBS account or a NatWest account or an Ulster Bank account, Jason?
Thankfully not. My account is with Barclays.
Oh, well, it must be absolutely fine. I mean, they are kind of a cartel, though, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Banks.
Peter Mandelson, the Prince of Darkness, is back. Now, Peter Mandelson is a sort of, in a way, kind of right-wing, left-wing person. He's a sort of, I suppose, Prince of the Blairites, really.
He is the snake.
I feel perfectly happy about being stinking rich, or something like that, he said.
It is. He's got more on the client network, it says here, of Lord Mountain's Global Council, LLP.
Oh, not another one. Okay. Sorry, whose is that?
Peter Mandelson, Lord.
Oh dear. And what's he doing with this LLP then?
Well, it says it's not clear which of the firm's close contacts are paying ones, but because Mandelson refuses to declare those, even though he provides services for them, and the rules suggest that he ought to, but he's actually refusing to do that. He has certainly been doing his bit for one company on the list, BP, making the most of his credentials on a visit this month to Azerbaijan. Wonderfully democratic or not, Azerbaijan.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, also Cameron has been going off to China, signing all these wonderful business deals with China. He's just come back from Sri Lanka, two incredibly despotic countries, but neither of them with even a shred of free speech or democracy.
Should we be worried then, Tony, that our government is doing deals with increasingly despotic countries?
I think we should. Especially if all their... I mean, for example, one of the deals, of course, is down the road at Hinkley Power Station, which we were talking about last week. This nationalised Chinese nuclear power station we're going to have on our doorsteps. I mean, when people start protesting, what are they going to do? They're going to send the Chinese troops in or what?
Well, Lord only knows. Well,
you're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
Now, I did say at the top of the hour that we were going to be looking at a Rosicrucian Christmas. Now, this is partly my suggestion, as I said last week, something to you, Jason, didn't I, about being interested in the Rosicrucians. And you've come up with a Rosicrucian's description of what Christmas is. But first of all, what is a Rosicrucian? These are some sort of secret society, I think, isn't it?
It's not just secret society. I mean, it has got many links to Freemasonry and Christianity. It's kind of almost a mystic Christianity, if you were, a mystic view of Christianity.
Okay, well, I'll tell you a little story about the Rosicrucians, because I was filming years ago a documentary for NTV, which is this Russian state broadcaster that broadcasts in Russian and everything, over in Russia. And I met up with them in London, and we did a tour around some of the main Masonic sites. We started off at the Freemasons Hall at Covent Garden, and you can probably, I don't know if people can find this online, but anyway, we were stood at the entrance to the Masonic Hall, and of course there's one of those five-pointed pentagrams on the floor, and I pointed out to their documentary, which they loved this, that when you walk in, the point of the pentagram is uppermost, which is supposed to be the sign for white witchcraft, but when you walk out, which way is it pointed?
It's then pointing downwards. That's intriguing.
Which is the sign for black witchcraft. So if you go in there, you have to be careful before you go out again. It depends if you think this symbolism really means anything. But certainly to Freemasons, symbolism is everything. I mean, we were talking about this a little bit a few weeks ago, weren't we, with William Cooper, the guy that actually really did. One only person I know who really did actually predict 9/11 and said that Bin Laden was going to be attacking America, and he said that in July 2001. So, you know, he talks a lot about a lot of the symbolism, what he calls the mystery schools, which is this historic religion basically that goes back right the way to sort of 3,000-4,000 BC. You know, that it was the Temple of Baal and people like that, he takes us all back to. And that's what he says. And I think he might well be right, that there are elements of that in modern Freemasonry behind the scenes. You know, obviously it's not overt, but they use symbolism. But anyway, so the Rosicrucians, you say they're Christians and Freemasons, but they can't be both at the same time.
It's kind of they're both and neither. They're absolutely fantastic beliefs. It's brilliant. I mean, it's rumoured they're the people behind the Georgia Guidestones, the ones that suggest cutting down the human population by nearly 97%, which is...
That doesn't sound very Christian. Mind you, of course, neither were the Crusaders very Christian. I mean, if you ever seen Terry Jones, who did a programme on the Crusades, which you can get on DVD, VHS, that sort of thing, he opens that entire thing by saying that describing the Crusaders as a bunch of cannibals. Now, that isn't very Christian either, is it? You know, we heard about Richard II in the Robin Hood story. He's supposed to be a great figure, but actually, you know, these people were there eating the flesh of the Muslims in places like the Middle East back in the day when the Crusades were going on. It's horrible. But so what is a Rosicrucian Christmas actually like? Is it a little bit horrific, or is it?
It's very interesting because they have a series of lectures to do with what they believe in Christianity and what they believe about the symbolism of Christianity, and also sort of deal with how it relates to human anatomy and between light and dark and everything.
It all sounds like a load of gobbledygook to me. But getting back to what I was saying about NTV and this Russian programme, I went into the Freemason Hall, but I went round to the corner to a place called Duke Street St James in London. If you're ever there, you can see it. And there's the strange door in Duke Street St James, which says Supreme Council, ring once on the door. And I was stood there doing a bit of filming with these Russians, and these two guys turned up, two masons turned up with trays of food and drink to go in, and we were stood in the way. And the guys were filming this, and I said to one of the guys, he said, could you move out of the way so we can get our food and drink in? And I thought to myself, well, I'm going to ask him a bit about this place, because it doesn't really say much on there. I said, it's a very beautiful building, but what is it actually for? And he said, oh, it's a Freemasonry. I said, well, what branch of Freemasonry? He said, oh, the Rosicrucians.
Oh, my God.
And then I went back and looked it up, and Tony Blair's Masonic Lodge, I can't remember, it's Studholme Alliance Lodge, was actually in that very, very same building there, the same building that was behind us.
So we're suggesting that Tony Blair is a Rosicrucian.
Well, possibly. Studholme, if anyone's interested, you can look all this stuff up online, but Studholme Alliance Lodge is where Blair is supposed to have been Rosicrucian.
I don't know, maybe it'll explain Tony Blair's lack of conscience, really.
Well, possibly. And also, of course, I mean, this fits in with a lot of historical criticism of these secret societies, in that they seem to make a beeline for political power, political parties and religions. So the idea is that, you know, any kind of religion, whether it's Buddhist, Hindu, Muslim, Jewish, whatever, the secret societies are very, very interested in everybody who is actually controlling those religions. And I'm talking also about the Protestant Church, of course, the Catholic Church, all these things that they're interested in. And of course, the other thing is political parties. And if these secret societies are doing stuff behind the scenes, I wonder what sort of a, you know, Christmas they have. I mean, you know, they seem to be a bit of a bunch of crazy people, slightly anyway. But anyway, look, one of the other things I wanted to get around to talking about was politics and God. What do you think?
Politics and God, well, I'm one of those people who believes that religion and state should be separate things.
Well, William Cooper, who we had on here a few weeks ago, said exactly the same, you know, that if religion gets too much into politics, then you end up with things like the Spanish Inquisition, you know, where people are just getting purged because of their beliefs. They're not reading the right thing, they're not thinking the right things. But then, you know, then there's political correctness. People get the sack for saying the wrong thing or whatever, in the same similar sort of way today. But anyway, we had one of the question times this year was based here in Bristol, actually at the City Academy here, where BCFM studios are. And one of the things that appeared on there was this interesting woman who brought up this very point. They were discussing, you know, whether the church should have women bishops, this kind of thing, whether they should have gay priests, this kind of thing. And this woman in the audience piped up, so let's have a little listen to her now.
Who is the head of the church, God or the government? On the one hand, you're saying that
Well, there you go. The church that
it's
I go to...
It's an established church.
The biblical definition of church, God is the head, not the government. And the problem that you're having here is when the government seeks to lead the church. So therefore, it stops following its constitution, which is the word of God, which is the Bible, and starts following the government.
No.
So I think that gentleman is correct. In a decade or so from now, when the touches have changed and it stops being about same-sex couples and maybe close relatives, we'll be here having the same debate. You cannot stretch the word of God to accommodate your own ideas. You either are for, you are against. You've said love and commitment towards a couple. What about love and commitment towards your God? If I stand and say that I love God and that I do not believe that marriage between a same-sex couple is correct, I'm called homophobic. I'm called every name under the sun. You don't tell me that I don't love or I'm committed to God. You call me a homophobic. So what does that make you? You celebrate your beliefs, but I can't celebrate mine.
Just to agree.
Well, that's just a clip there from BBC's Question Time, which took place here in Bristol earlier in the year. What are your thoughts about that, Jason? The idea that people don't have to necessarily agree with what the government says, but then they have to do it because it's the law.
Well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? The government cannot interfere in the church's bidding. The actual Westminster government can't. The Queen can.
Can she?
She's the head of the church.
Yeah. Well, what does she actually do as a head of the church? You know, does she still believe in the Belial, but the divine right of the Queen? You know, like she is actually.
I don't think she does. I think her husband does, but I don't think she does.
Okay, well, we mentioned Bill Cooper there as well, and I think it's just interesting to hear, you know, that little blast from Question Time from Bristol.
Well, it was just a really interesting thing because she made a really interesting point about religion, but you know, there is that thing that was written in the Bible did happen in a time and a place completely different from the one we live in now. And whether or not you can apply the laws and beliefs that are written down in there.
But what happens when the two start going against each other? Because, I mean, traditionally we had church law in Britain, which was, you know, if you broke the church law, you would have to go to the courts, basically, you know, agreed with what the church was saying. Now they've diverted in different directions, haven't they? And we're supposed to live in a secular society.
But there's always some arguments that, in some cases, it just makes it a little bit more sensible, if you know what I mean. Some of the church laws were a little mad.
Well, there's also the thing. There's also this sort of secular inquisition, isn't there? If people have a certain point of view. You know,
you can get
the secular people just after you. Just as, thankfully, not being burnt at the stake yet, though, as far as I know.
Well, as somebody believes a lot in equality and diversity, I can understand where a lot of the secular people come from. On the other hand, we do rather overdo it.
Bristol Community FM 93.2. Your voice, your choice.
Well, we mentioned Bill Cooper just a minute there, and I must admit I've been getting a little bit obsessed with Bill, and he's written one of the books, which is on our interesting books for Christmas list this week. William Cooper's book, Behold a Pale Horse. Before we discuss that, I mean, this is a quote from the Bible. It's all about the book of Revelation, and the pale horse apparently is one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. But let's have a listen now a bit more of Bill Cooper, and this one is Bill Cooper's last prediction.
Years ago, many, many years ago, in fact, 1972, I was sitting at my desk at about 4:30 in the morning at the headquarters of the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet, arranging the information that had come in over the last 24 hours into a logical order so that we could prepare a briefing for the Admiral and his staff, which would take place later that morning. Among the papers I found on my desk was a document entitled Operation Majority, and it was not the entire paperwork involving this operation, but was merely a synopsis of the operation and projects contained under it. One of these projects was called Project Red Light. The purpose, according to this document, was to back engineer captured extraterrestrial technology for adaptation into the United States space program. Now, I have since come to believe that the extraterrestrial portion of all of this is nonsense, but that the technology is real. I believe that many of us were shown these documents over the years so that later we would talk about it. I mean, how can you keep the existence of extraterrestrials, if they were real, a secret? And how could anyone keep quiet knowing that they had seen documentation, official government documents labeled top secret, that expressed that these extraterrestrials were real and had visited this earth? I wanted to know just how true all of this was, and I began a program of research to find out if extraterrestrials were real. The first thing I did was collect every bit of documentation that I could find, both from the Freedom of Information Act, from the research of others, from books that had been printed on the subject of UFOs, and of course through my network of friends in the intelligence community. What I discovered was amazing. What I discovered, ladies and gentlemen, is that there has been a plan in existence since about 1917, and probably before that, to create an artificial extraterrestrial threat to this earth in order to create a one-world totalitarian socialist government.
Fascinating little ideas there. 1917, he's saying, that was one of the first thoughts to have extraterrestrials. I mean, it's around about the same time as people like, not Orson Welles, what was his name? The science fiction writer? H.G. Wells. Yeah. Was writing things, you know, like The Time Machine, this kind of thing, in the 1920s and 30s as well. But it's an interesting thought, isn't it, that he, as a military officer, is being shown documents which are just there simply to mislead him and to make him easy to discredit when he leaves.
That is fantastic.
I mean, you know, this also links up in a way with the crop circles over in Wiltshire, you know, down Salisbury Plain, and, you know, that the whole thing being basically set up in order to make people think that there's this kind of extraterrestrial. It's an immense amount of money goes into that. Most of it, I imagine, public money just deceiving people.
It is, it's disinformation agents, you know, just the people who either come up with really fantastic theories or who try and disprove every theory by acting as if they're proving it.
Anyway, back down to Earth a little bit now from our extraterrestrial extraterrestrial adventure there with Bill Cooper. William Cooper's book is called Behold a Pale Horse, and that's one on our little list we're going to be doing today as a possible Christmas book. One of the reviews of it says, I first read this book in 1992 and didn't believe a word. I was at the time a very bleeding heart liberal. This couldn't be right. The government entities weren't telling me the truth. Needless to say, I and my newlywed wife researched what we could to find it was exactly as Mr. Cooper had described it. And I suppose you kind of expect that when someone has been right at the centre of power like he was in naval intelligence in the United States. And then, of course, he had his own radio show for many years in Arizona called The Hour of the Time. You'll see it online quite a lot. THOT, I think it's called. Or THHT, something like that. And he's a character that's fascinated me over the last few weeks anyway, Jason. The other thing is all this talk about Freemasons and whether it had links to literally to priesthoods from thousands of people. The Masons say they started in 1717. I don't believe that at all. I just think that's a more recent, up-to-date version of something that's been going on for centuries. He also talks about the adepts. The adepts being the people who are adept at the controlling the rest of us. Through an illusion of democracy. It's a bit creepy. But anyway, back down to earth a little bit. This time it's with a guy who wrote a book called Inside the Brotherhood. His name's Martin Short, and I met up with him about 18 months ago. But here's a little clip from him about the police and the City of London. And the reason I'm playing this is because at the moment we are dealing with some serious criminality in the City of London. And also, this year has been an incredible year for the Hillsborough disaster and also the police not investigating properly Jimmy Savile at the BBC. You know, the shaken confidence in the police is pretty horrific, and it looks as if police over the years have been using their power to actually cover up rather than investigate crime. So let's have a listen now to Martin Short talking about Freemasons, the City of London and the police.
I don't want to give the impression that however many Freemasons there are in this country now, or a good deal less than it used to be, that they're all policemen. In fact, Freemasonry is full of people in many walks of life, and also, by and large, these days, dedicated lodges for police officers would not be encouraged, though there is, in fact, one called the St. James's Lodge in central London, which is entirely staffed by police officers. However, in an average lodge, you might get people from any walk of life, and in among them might be a police officer. Now, it would be a sore temptation, bearing in mind the oaths of mutual defence and support that Freemasons undertake, if you were in trouble, whether it's over a parking ticket or a drunken driving offence or, you know, some punch-up with a neighbour, you know, that you might hope that you could turn to a brother as a Mason in distress, and favours would follow, that maybe bits of paper could be lost and you could avoid prosecution. I think that's a bit more difficult these days, but, of course, what used to be common practice, you can't be absolutely sure doesn't happen now.
What about the City of London? Because I know back in the 1980s you had a good look at the death of the banker Roberto Calvi. Now, a lot of people now are looking at the City of London and thinking, can we trust the banking fraternities, and can we trust these big investment banks that seem to have such a lot of power over our futures at the moment?
There is absolutely no doubt that Freemasonry used to be extremely strong in the City of London. We obtained a lodge list of all the Lord Mayor's Lodge in London, and universally, one after another, over about 70 years, the Lord Mayors of London were masters of this lodge. In fact, some of them were initiated only after they had become Lord Mayor. Unfortunately, I haven't been blessed by being handed another copy of the Guildhall Lodge members list.
The Guildhall Lodge. Well, this starts to explain a few things, possibly, Jason. We started on Rosicrucians, but now we're in the full-blooded, blue-blooded Masonic Lodge, which is controlling the City of London. I mean, the Guildhall. These big speeches we see with all the gold everywhere and the food, where Boris Johnson does his little thing where he says, oh, the people who are rich have got high IQs. And the people who are poor have low IQs, and so we've got to shake up society, shake up the cornflake packet, you know, to let all the high IQ people rise to the top. Well, maybe, you know, he's just talking about a few privileged people, and they're not really intelligent at all. They're just greedy.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you would have thought that if the smart people of the world were rich, then you would have thought sort of people who are into brain surgery would be exceedingly rich, but...
Well, there's a lot of nonsense talked about Freemasonry too. Of course, it's one of those things like the Illuminati. Everyone points to it when there's an earthquake. Oh, it's them. They've done
this. New World Order.
But actually, Martin Short's book Inside the Brotherhood is a really good, proper look at, a proper journalistic look. He's an ex World in Action journalist. Worked for years on the Granada TV, ITV. Series, which has so sadly gone. But anyway, look. That's our little look at Freemasonry this week, from William Cooper, the Rosicrucians, to Martin Short and Inside the Brotherhood. But we'll be coming back to some more, I suppose, normal news after some music.
Being beat up and battered around, being sent up and I've been shot.
Take your senses and
hypnotized, overexposed, commercialized, handle me with care. I'm so tired of being lonely. I still have some love to give. Won't you show me that you really care? Everybody got somebody to lean on. Put your body next to mine and dream on. I've been uptight and made a mess, but I'll clean it up myself, I guess. Oh, the sweet smell of success.
What do you do here?
I'm concerned with the maintenance of law and order.
You're Gestapo.
When one is dealing with terrorists, one has to secure information by means of the most effective interrogation techniques available. These are men of violence, mademoiselle, who will stop at nothing. They don't use kid gloves, and nor can we. Information. That's the most important weapon we have, information. And my job is obtaining it, that's all. Every government fighting terrorism faces this problem, and always will, I expect.
Well, I don't know if you recognise that clip there, Jason. I mean, first of all, I should say the music you heard was the Travelling Wilburys. Everybody's got somebody. But that clip, did you recognise any of that at all? We were talking about the Gestapo, Sturmbannführer Kessler.
No.
What? No, well, it's actually a BBC series from the 1970s, and late 70s and early 80s called Secret Army. And it's a three-part series, very, very good, really well worth getting on a DVD, because there's nothing much worth watching on television these days in the evenings. And it'll keep you going for a month or so, one of those, or maybe, depends if you watch it every night, only a week or so. But yeah, Secret Army was a programme made by the BBC, and then they made another programme sort of taking the mickey out of it called Allo Allo. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yes, it's like where they're going. Actually, in a way, very, very, very good taking the mickey. But why do you think I played that? Now, here's a quiz question for you.
Well, because interesting. The guy even says government tackling terrorism.
That's right. And I mean, were the people fighting the Gestapo really terrorists?
Well,
of course,
we wouldn't say that we say freedom fighters.
Well, I think they probably were. In fact, they were probably us, as well as the French Resistance and people like that, resistance fighters. That's the first point, is this word terrorist is now used ubiquitously everywhere to describe anybody that doesn't agree with the government, whether or not that government is actually representing the people or whether it's oppressing the people, they're still terrorists.
There is a wonderful usage of that one again on the film V for Vendetta, where they constantly talk about V, the main character played wonderfully by Hugo Weaving in the film. And, you know, they're sort of saying, we have to arrest the terrorist. But, of course, V for Vendetta is based in sort of like a dystopian fascist Britain, and he's playing a freedom fighter.
Well, I mean, so who is the terrorist? I mean, we have Max Kaiser on Russia Today talking about the financial terrorists, don't we? I mean, they are. I mean, we heard RBS this week. The financial terrorists. They are. I recommend thoroughly Ian Fraser's blog. He's a financial writer that's, you know, talking about all this kind of stuff and explaining just how these people bring terror to people's lives and actually closing down viable businesses. This is a form of terrorism, far, far worse than some others on other parts of the planet. No, the thing is about GCHQ and information. I mean, you know, they are collecting information on absolutely everything and everybody. They have a mission to end privacy right across the planet for everybody. And that means that they've got everything of yours. That is to say, they're in your mobile phone. They're looking at your photographs in your mobile phone. They are hacking into your computers, hard drives, taking all that information. They're sniffing your passwords. One of the most horrendous things I saw in the news over the last week, Jason, is this 500,000 bits of spyware being put onto people's personal computers, laptops and everything by the NSA and GCHQ. 500,000. I mean, you need a proper antivirus to get rid of these, but you'll probably find that the antivirus won't even say they're there. But why? I mean, how on earth is it that we've come where taxpayers' money is being spent on putting viruses and spyware onto people's computers so they can sniff their passwords? I mean, you know, we're getting into a very strange situation. So anyway, the other thing, of course, is that three-part series by the BBC, very, very well worth getting. I suppose we could add that, really, to our Books for Christmas list. The other ones being Michael Hastings' book, The Operators. Michael Hastings sadly died earlier this year in a suspicious car crash, Mercedes crash, where his car suddenly accelerated for no apparent reason, smashed into a tree and burst into flames. And he was an investigative journalist that had got the head of the US Army in Afghanistan sacked, and he was also about to out the fact, his girlfriend said this, that his story he was working on was that the US military was being used against not parliamentarians, senators and congressmen in America, and against journalists in America. And then he finds himself dead, unfortunately. So that book there is Michael Hastings' last book, called The Operators. Also, we've got Jerome Corsi's book, Who Killed JFK, which really does go into some of the connections between the secret state, the big companies, these massive arms companies, and today. So he's not just talking about what actually happened in Dealey Plaza 50 years ago in Dallas and JFK's assassination. He's also talking about you know, the effect of the on the world today and links to the war on terror. And finally, one you mentioned, Jason, wasn't it?
It was Who Owns Britain? And the book is by
Kevin Cahill. And it's a sort of little gazetteer you can keep in your glove box in your car of every county in Britain and who owns it. It's just fascinating.
I'd love to know who owns Berkshire, which, well, it's probably the royal family, actually. We are the royal county of Berkshire, after all.
Oh, are you now? Okay.
That is the official title of the county that I live in.
The fascinating thing is, of course, that many of these counties have got massive estates where people have owned the land since the Norman Conquest, which, funnily enough, links in with the City of London too, right? Because the City of London was virtually made a separate state after the Norman Conquest.
It is a county by itself.
That's right. They've got their own police force. Everything's completely run their own rules. Quite often you'll find the City of London police come and investigate things. It's a sort of...
They actually own a lot of stuff outside of London as well. I mean, for those who have ever been to Berkshire, there's a wonderful little nature place there, which is partly owned by National Trust, called Burnham Beaches, but it's also partly owned by the City of London Corporation.
Well, I suppose the City of London could actually buy up and own everything if they really wanted to, and maybe that's their plan for the years to come. I don't know if we get a say in the matter. Somehow I doubt it. Anyway, anything more to say about the Snowden revelations? Because the Guardian editor, Alan Rushbridger, has been in to get interviewed by MPs, hasn't he?
So, tell me what you said, Tony.
Well, I mean, I came up with this comment, information vampires, to describe GCHQ, this wonderful Bletchley Park, who used to help break Hitler's codes and tell the Russians about the Battle of Kursk and things like that, where the German troop dispositions were. But now it seems the enemy is us.
How they're are we watching turning? You, Gosling.
Yes, they're watching you, Yanakopoulos. I promise you that. Yeah, so the figure came out this week, didn't it, that only 1% of the Snowden's files have actually been used as news stories by The Guardian. So the 99% they've held back, they've been quite good, haven't they? I think maybe the government better lay off The Guardian, otherwise maybe they'll publish some even more explosive reports about what they've been up to.
I think it'd be interesting to see what was in the other 99%. I want to know if it really shows just how deep the rabbit hole goes, to use a phrase from The Matrix.
Are you a fan of The Matrix?
It is a great film series, and it's actually made by the same people that made V for Vendetta.
Ah, right. Who are they?
They're the Wachowski brothers. They made all three Matrix films, and they made the V for Vendetta film. And the interesting thing is... The guy who played Agent Smith in The Matrix is the guy who plays a hero, V, in V for Vendetta.
Ah, I see. So, but The Matrix is a little bit surreal, isn't it? It's almost as if everybody's being controlled through...
Well, it is dystopian.
We are being controlled through money. We all need money. Back in years, centuries gone, we all had a little plot of land in our village, you know. We could go and grow food and just go about our day. But once you've had your land stolen from underneath you, you literally have to do what you're told by whoever is controlling the money. And that, to go back to the Rosicrucians and the Freemasons at Martin Short, is the City of London.
Yeah. That's shocking, really, isn't it?
It all comes around in one great big nasty circle back to them. Well,
sit and contemplate on that. Merry Christmas.
Well, the other thing is, of course, that we do actually have plenty of land for everybody if people really wanted to sort the situation out.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's so many empty properties. You covered this the other week.
Yeah, and one of the things that really annoys me is the way that they've got rid of the whole sort of travelling lifestyle. Gypsies and travellers are now basically, it's impossible to be a gypsy or a traveller. You're told you've got to go into this little corral, into this little traveller site, and you're not allowed to basically stop by the side of the road overnight, even though we've got verges. You know, if you drive up Gloucestershire and places like that, you'll find big verges on the side of the road ready for people's horses overnight where they should stop. But no more. You know, you've got to be fixed in a particular place where GCHQ and the rest of them can keep a good eye on you.
And the tax man, of course.
Well, that's what it's all about, isn't it? Okay, so I think probably just about time to wind up now. We've been rabbiting on far too much, but we're going to have now Jeff Sparks with the What's On Guide.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
Now time for the What's On Guide with Jeff Sparks. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Tony. Hello. This is your What's On Guide from Dialect. Starting with Friday, 6th of December, the Blue Aeroplanes will be performing with support from Rita Lynch, Peter and the Harmonics and Commander McNeil at the Fleece in St Thomas Street, Bristol. Tickets are £10 in advance and doors open at 7:30 p.m. Into Saturday, 7th of December, the AC/DC Tribute Act, ADHD, will be performing at the Reckless Engineer in Temple Gate, Bristol. Entry is free and the gig starts at 9:30 p.m. On to Song of the Week, and I present Motorhead. They are one of the best British hard rock groups around, with a career spanning 38 years and 21 studio albums, 10 live albums and numerous singles. This is from their latest album, Aftershock, and is the song titled Dust and Glass.
Yeah.
was Motorhead with Dust and Glass from their latest album Aftershock. For more information, you can check out www.imotorhead, that is the letter I, motorhead.com. Staying with Saturday, 7th of December, Emily Teague will be performing at the Folk House in Park Street, Bristol. Tickets are £6 each and doors open at 7:30 p.m. Finally, on Tuesday, 10th of December, Theatre of Hate will be performing with special guests at the Fleece in St Thomas Street, Bristol. Tickets are £15 in advance and doors open at 7:30 p.m. That is all from me. Thanks for listening. Have a good week. Take care and goodbye.
Never mind the Motorhead man with the pacemaker. Theatre of Hate. I've not heard of them for probably 30 years, Jeff.
I know they're still around. Yeah, Kirk Brandon's still with them.
Amazing. Just remind us when they're on again, would you?
They are playing on Tuesday, 10th of December at the Fleece in St Thomas Street, Bristol.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, if I can't get a ticket, I'll certainly be standing outside having a listen because they were an amazing group. I can remember.
Yeah, they were.
That's all for this week. Dialects, a weekly podcast for your MP3 player, produced by volunteers and broadcast on Bristol Community FM 93.2 at 11 a.m. every Thursday morning. If you're online, you can subscribe to our RSS feed or email list, which will remind you every Tuesday evening when Dialect goes online. You can do that or download this weekly podcast from dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to Jeff Sparks, Jason Yannakopoulos and to studio engineer Dave Bazanko for this week's show. Dialect's a brief weekly podcast for your MP3 player and Bristol Broadband Co-op produce it. Anyone can contribute. If you'd like to, contact us through Volunteering Bristol on 0117 989 7733 and you'll find them on the web at bristolvolunteers.org.uk. As promised, here is their number once more, 0117 989 7733. That was Dialect and I'm Tony Gosling. Wishing you a very good week. Thanks for listening. Till the same time next week. Goodbye for now.
Sofa on a Sunday afternoon. Man, girl, all right. Just give me some kind of sign.